We've reported quite a bit here on elder care. I sent dispatches from the front lines when my mom died. We've reviewed books on the subject. And our next guest has written a review of books on elder care and found them lacking because they don't tell her story, which begins with her screaming at a coworker one day, "I want my father to die." So, this is not your typical tale of elder care, but it's one a lot of people may relate to, caring for a parent you never liked that much. Sandra Tsing Lo's article in The Atlantic is called "Daddy Issues, Why Caring for My Aging Father Has Me Wishing He Would Die." She's a humorist, but she's not kidding. She's also host and commentator on KPCC in Pasadena, California, and joins us from there. Sandra, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And, you know, a lot of people are thanking you for writing this article. And some people, of course, can't understand it because the typical story of caring for an elderly parent is one of, you know, heartbreaking loss, losing them to Alzheimer's, watching them, someone that people loved so much just become so dependent on them. Yours is a different kind of story. What was your relationship with your father?
Well, my relationship with my dad when I was a child was fraught because he was sort of an angry parent. He was a Shanghainese engineer. He was really cheap. He wanted us to study math. If you didn't do your algebra right, he would yell at you. In my 20s, of course, as soon as we could leave the house, all three of us just got away from him as much as we could. And then in our 30s, you know, you start to kind of mellow a little bit. By your 40s, you know, when our dad was about in his 80s at that time, then I have my own children. I see how hard it is to parent. There's some nostalgia about this frail 80-something-year-old person who is probably does not have that many years left. So that then it becomes really warm. And I describe this scene in the article where he was 89, and one morning he just couldn't get out of bed, and he calls me, and I scream over to his house, and he's just lying there absolutely waxy and can't wake up and is barely breathing. And like his resting pulse rate is like about 36. So he's swum on the beach every day until then, so he's just really he's almost like the undead.
And you're weeping because you think he is dying.
Yes, and I'm weeping, and I call my sister. I go, "Oh my God, I think he's really dead at this point." And she goes, "I know, and it's so sad." But we both felt oddly at peace, you know, that we'd been through our Kubler-Ross stages. We'd been angry, we'd been friends, we'd been mellow, we'd cried over him, and it was sad, but he had lived a good long life, and at 89. But then the problem was that he wasn't actually quite dead yet. So I called the paramedics, and they came, they put an IV in his arm. He was just dehydrated. He immediately woke up, snorted angrily, "What are you doing? Get the hell out of here. Where's my ice cream?" And he was fit as a fiddle again. So it was, and I say jokingly in the article that people may take issue with unless they're in the situation of like, "Oh, if only I'd, you know, taken a frying pan and finished the job," hit him over the head and finished the job when we were so close, because he has lived on. And he's now like 91, and he has Parkinson's, so he is in a wheelchair, although he can also walk, but he's just kind of ferociously alive every day. You know, he will call me, you know, it's kind of like the classical music station played an opera by a French guy 2 weeks ago. I don't know what it is. Find out. Just like, I don't even know what it is. And he'll call every hour,
Sandra,
about that.
Sandra, yeah. Calm down. Because this is what has happened to you. You can't stop.
I've become an insane person.
You're a Kafka character, as you
exactly
write.
That's what happens. You become kind of a gibbering idiot, and you can't stop, and you just can't. So it's good to have siblings that you can share some of these stories with, because otherwise the rest of the world, they just don't get it.
By the way, I want to underscore, you know, you write about how he was a tough dad. I mean, when you say he was cheap, there was no Christmas, there was no heat.
Right.
He was mean to your mother.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
When, you know, we're talking about a very tense relationship. But now it's not just that he's irascible. You are also caring for his 20-year younger new wife who is in dementia.
And neither has any acute illness or disease. She has kind of garden variety dementia, but keeps wandering out at night. And my dad gets himself out every day all over the city. And he kind of hitchhikes, and he kind of is completely almost like a public nuisance. So we have to hire a caregiver at like $5,000 a month just to follow my dad and keep him out of trouble.
Well, it's not just that you've hired Thomas, who sounds like a saint, but
he
Thomas
is.
Comes with a family that you've helped set up in a home. There's a car that you helped get for him because you're so desperate to have him help you.
you think it's very easy to get a caregiver at $18 an hour or even $20 an hour to come. All you need to do is, like, wheel my dad's wheelchair and keep him snacked. But we have people quit before noon every day because my dad kind of hazes them, harasses them. If it's kind of a female caregiver, because my dad always wants sex every day. Sex!
I forgot that part.
You know, he'll grab their boobs and they just go, I don't want this. And there are so many elderly people now, it's turning into a buyer's market or whichever market it would be where you the struggle to find elder care is really getting harder. Yeah. Even if you're willing to pay top dollar, people simply won't do it.
So you've co-signed onto an apartment for Thomas, the caregiver, and his wife and
right.
four children,
right.
just in from the Philippines. And
right.
you're also dashing back and forth to the house when emergencies come up. A lot of people can relate to this. And you're doing this with this feeling of what?
It's a combination of irritation, futility, angst, a sense of failure, a sense of not being responsible. I mean, people in Los Angeles will call my radio station at KPC. They'll call my bosses and say, I know you have a commentator sandwich saying low there. I have her dad in my car right now, so that people actually will find him and think we're horrible children because we're doing nothing. It's not like, oh my God, we've hired $10,000 in caregiving. You know, my sister's called every hour to track him. And sometimes my father, just as a game, will elude his caregivers. I mean, it's just there's this sense every day of this you know, panic in your chest of what kind of phone call are you going to get today. And in this book that I quote Jane Gross, A Bittersweet Season, she mm-hmm. compares the mommy track to the daughter track. It's kind of like, although we as working mothers, and I have two children, 9 and 11, and they're the least difficult part of my day. You know, our kids are, you figure you're going to take care of them from 0 to 18. You could be taking care of an elderly parent from, you know, from like 78 to 94.
Well, you mentioned A Bittersweet Season by Jane Gross, the terrific journalist for the New York Times. You also quote from Gail Shee's book on her husband dying. And what you don't find in those books is the storyline you're living, which is this is a father that you had some ambivalent feelings about. Nobody talks about that.
Oh, right. Here's my 91-year-old father who does not even particularly remember how many grandchildren he has or what their names are. So he's not fulfilling kind of the grandparent role. It's almost like he's the baby. And I used to joke, I'm the youngest, so I never was told there would be a new baby. But there is. It's my dad.
Sandra Tsing Lo. Her controversial article in The Atlantic is titled Daddy Issues, Why Caring for My Aging Father Has Me Wishing He Would Die. We asked her to read an excerpt.
He is taking everything. He is taking all the money. He's taken years of my life sitting in doctor's offices, in pharmacies, in waiting rooms. With his horrid, selfish, grotesque behavior, he's chewed through every shred of my sentimental affection for him. He's taken the serenity I fought for and won in 1,000 hours of therapy centered on my family. In fact, he's destroyed my belief in family as a thing that boys want up. Quite the opposite. Family is like the piano around Holly Hunter's ankle, dragging me implacably down.
So there you have it. And Sandra, again, this is a man that by your accounts was cheap and cruel to his family. His second wife, Alice, is 20 years younger, but she's in dementia. You're spending on both about $10,000 a month, including hiring a caregiver named Thomas, co-signing on a loan for his apartment, spending down your dad's assets and soon yours, watching your two kids' college tuition fly out the window.
For an endlessly open period of time. And it's a bit of a crisis in America that's coming. People have written about that, but I am palpably feeling it of like, I don't want my dad to, you know, be hit by a car in the street, but if he wheels himself out into the street where everyone tells him not to, I don't know at what point we can keep trying to save him from himself.
Well, you're doing something that a lot of families have done. You're spending down his assets. Once you've done that, why not, you know, you've paid into the system, why not put him in a Medicaid-run facility? His second wife is only related to you through him. Why not put them in some sort of institution where you don't have to do this?
That's a really interesting question because we have her in one for the moment. It's very new. My dad does not want to go. So either you have to handcuff him and force him in to go screaming, or you have to actually medicate and sedate them so they're out of it, like One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, mm-hmm. and shove them in there. It is kind of like a morally hard question. Like Alice, who is 73, if she wanders on the freeway at 3 a.m, then it is for her safety that we will totally sedate her and lock her down. And that is a really tough decision to make. And my sister and I have been back and forth on this, and it's very wrenching. She's not totally all there, but she can be a pleasant person who gardens, and to see her sedated and her spirit crushed so we can lock her up.
Yeah, they're not reduced enough to right. be in some of the homes. That, you know,
right.
But they can't live by themselves safely.
Right.
Look, you know, there's been response to your article. Chill J said on the Atlantic website, you ready?
Yeah.
An ugly
Bring it on, the Atlantic.
An ugly story from a singular brat who apparently thought life promised her a rose garden and reneged. If this author so abhors caring for her father, stop. Both her father and the reading public would appreciate it. You can't stop.
I love being called a brat at 50. And I think that's part of it. I think some of these stories are just outrageous. They're outlandish. They're ugly. They're not fun to look at. They're, you know, but that is what many of us are going through.
But that's the point. People don't like hearing somebody angry at an older person. You're not supposed to be angry at the elderly. They are vulnerable and fragile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Are they? I mean, my father, I mean, he's a trickster and a manipulator. You know, it's like one time I got called from the emergency room in Thousand Oaks that my dad had been on the bus stop. He had fainted. He'd hit his head on the bus bench. It started bleeding. And passerby took him, and then the fire department took him to Thousand Oaks, which is 1 hour and 15 minutes from my house. So I jump in my car. I drive 1 hour and 15 minutes. And he goes, "Get me out of here." He starts throwing like this whole scene. And so finally, of course, after 2 hours, he's unconvincible, not even for his own good. I ended up signing him out and driving him home. He just would not comply with people who are trying to help him. You know, this is a little bit of a side note, but I'm Asian American. When the multicultural movement first came in the 90s, there was a whole political correctness of like, if you're a minority character, we shouldn't say anything bad about minorities. They are noble people who never make bad decisions. They don't like, no, they're really noble people. And that shrinks down the wholeness of who they are. And I think kind of the same thing with this elder care thing. You know, elderly people, they're people that, you know, have lived longer than the rest of us, and they're not all beautiful, good, wise, compliant, vulnerable people. Some of them are the same kick-ass pissants they've always been, and we honor them by telling their story as exactly as it is. And that reminds me of the other book that I quote, and here's Bernard Cooper's The Bill for My Father, right. where he paints a picture of his dad, which is just extraordinary.
Well, this is what I was going to say. You know, a couple things. One, you find out you're not alone because of Bernard Cooper's memoir about his father, who typed on his customary onion skin paper reimbursement for parenting outlays that totaled $2 million. So he asked his son to reimburse him for raising him. And so you find out that there are other people who have tough relations with their parents.
Oh, absolutely. And I just have to also add on to that, that now Bernard had two brothers who also died sadly in their, you know, in the early ages of adulthood. And upon their deaths, his father sent their widows bills on behalf of those the brothers who died to pay him back monetarily. He sent it to their widows right at their funerals. I mean, that is, how can you even, the grieving widows now, they have to write a check for $2 million to the grandpa. I mean, it's just, it's insane.
And he might have to take care of that father. But you also remind yourself that if you were in your father's native China, he would be living with you.
Yes. Oh. Yes. And that is like, thank God for America, for the Western world. Although he might not even choose to live with me at this right. point, or let me move in with him, because I would dim his fun. And also I would kick out one of the boarders that he rents our house to. You know, my childhood bedroom in his house is being rented out by somebody on Craigslist, which is what my dad does also.
And by the way, he thought that between a young wife and those tenants, he thought the tenants would take care of him in old age, that they would,
right.
they would bathe him.
Yeah, they would wash him in the shower.
But
yeah.
Sandra, the other thing you note is that you go over there at one point to visit with your 90-something father, his wife, and Thomas, the caretaker, who's now... And it actually is, it's a kind of a nice, it's an okay day. And I guess that's what you're saying, that it's not going to be what Jane Gross writes about, a transformative experience that'll transform the relationship between you and a parent, but you'll have good days.
Yeah, and that's kind of all you can hope for. I think it becomes very Buddhist in a certain way, and I think for me, as an anxious 50-year-old sandwich generation parent who works, I parent my children, I have this aging parent, I got for a while into this mode of 401k, retirement, college fund, this and that. And it's not that I've let it entirely go, but I go, you do what you do. And then if my kid needs to go to junior college, she will, because we actually cannot make this beautiful post-boomer financial roadmap, because my father is at the center of it. And he's this pulsing supernova of chaotic yet life-affirming energy in his own way. So in a way, it has mellowed me of like, what can you do every day? What can you do? Just live on.
That's Sandra Tsing Lo, host of the radio show The Low, L-O-H, Life, and The Low Down on Science at KPCC in Pasadena, California. But we've been talking about her article, The Daddy Issues, Her Care for Her Elderly Dad. It's in The Atlantic. You can read it at hereandnow.org. Sandra, thanks, and truly, best of luck to you with this.
My pleasure. Today is still a good day.